The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Do you think, and I can tell by the look on your face, do you think that going old school and older with the rotation and saying, all right, we're going to like have our ballpark be a factor, do you think that could work for the Cardinals?
No. Now, look, man, it's the same as the Cubs trying to run the same damn team back out there again. Go get better players. You know, get good players. No, I think they sold their fans a bill of goods by promising three pitchers and getting the guys they did. Sonny Gray was the one good slam dunk signing I'll give him credit for. I won't give him credit for the other two.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined here at Sloan Park in Mesa, Arizona, by the writer who used to call this home, but now has been wooed to the side of Skyline Chili. And wait, how far away so are all these? Of course, it's Cincinnati Inquirer baseball writer.
Skyline Chili.
Because I have to.
This stuff sucks.
No, it's great.
No, it's awful.
It's a delicacy and it's wonderful, and you need to embrace.
3 in the morning after you've had a bunch of scotch. Yes, maybe.
No, always.
No.
For breakfast.
No, you're out of your mind.
It's amazing.
You're crazy.
That is, of course, Gordon Whitmire, longtime Cubs beat writer, longtime Twins beat writer, former, what other Cubs did you cover?
Angels.
Mariners.
That's right.
How many is that?
That's
five?
Yeah, that's a lot.
Five. That's how many it is.
And now covering the Reds for the Cincinnati Inquirer. How tightly compact are these Cactus League groups? How far away right now are we from where the Reds train? Because I'm all new here, so tell me all about this Cactus League.
Oh, yeah, right. Because out in Florida, I mean, the ends of the geographical extremes are huge. When I was doing the Twins, it was in Fort Myers, and oh my God, unless you were playing the Red Sox
across. Is that the Cardinals flying in right now?
Well, based on your clubhouse time, I'm guessing it might be. it was awful. You know, you'd drive across Alligator Alley to go play the Orioles or drive what's the opposite of God's country? To go Dunedin to play the Blue Jays. And then through the middle of the swamp to find the Tigers back in the day. So
Cleveland was there, Winter Haven, right?
Yeah, right, up there, not far from the Tigers.
The snakes in the press box.
Right, Paul Hoynes.
Yeah.
Yeah, famous story. Yeah. Arizona's always been better, and this the area right out here where we're sitting is technically Mesa, but it's right next to Tempe and Scottsdale. So there's two teams in North Scottsdale, straight up the one of the highways. There's the Giants closer in Scottsdale. There's the Angels right around the corner in Tempe. And if you go a little further out in Mesa, that's where the A's are. It's where the Cubs used to be. Where the A's are out to where the Reds are with the Guardians in Goodyear, that's as far as the extremes get geographically out here. And it's not that bad. I-10's been shut down a lot this spring, so it feels a little bit like Florida that way. But other than that, it's the best. It's the best way to cover spring training.
What are some characteristics of the Cactus League? Looking from afar, and I haven't been here since I was a kid. I was in high school last time I was at the Cactus League, and got to say it was the Ricky Henderson, Jose Canseco, A's that I saw, the Willie Randolph, Gary Sheffield, Milwaukee Brewers. Those were the guys that I saw that spring. But looking from Florida over here, I always thought that there was more offense to be had here and colder mornings to be had here. Does that tend to be the case?
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate. And a very
shorter
hot,
drives,
very hot afternoons, but it's a dry heat. And that was always the talk. I covered the Mariners back in the 90s. I mean, going all the way back to the first spring trainings I was at, they always said that, yeah, don't trust the offensive numbers in Arizona because the ball flies out here. I don't know that that's really true. I don't know that that's a complete trend. But I don't trust spring training stats anyway.
Yeah, it's the opposite at Roger Dean Stadium in Jupiter. Is like it's one of the hardest places to hit in baseball. And like you look at towards the end of the spring every year, like who has the lightest slugging percentage, who has the fewest runs, who has the fewest home runs. And it's like the Marlins and the Cardinals. It's like, well, yeah, they call Roger Dean Stadium the dead zone. They call it home. So it's how do you weigh that in? How do you look at that?
Well, right, but part of it too is right that heavier air out there. Don't the breaking balls work better? And so pitching in general in Florida is probably going to be a little better too. I don't know about Roger Dean Stadium in particular, but obviously you factor it in the same way you do in the regular season with ballpark factors, right?
Speaking of ballpark factors and dead zones, let's jump right into it. The National League Central.
Oh my God. Is that where you were going the whole time?
I was going to try to get there. I figured you've been out here in the Cactus League, and so you've seen three of the teams that fancy themselves as contenders for the division. The Brewers, the Cubs, where we're at today here at Sloan Park, and then, of course, the team you cover, the Reds. Have you seen anything this spring that suggests they're correct, that any of them are going to make a bid for NL Central champ?
Sure, any of them. Yeah, I think...
Is that by default, or is that through their own design?
Well, if you want to be generous, you can call it parody. If you want to be honest, you can call it crap. Because, we're sitting here at Sloan Park as we talk, where the Cubs are, who they have more revenue than anybody in the division. And they went out and patted themselves on the back for bringing Cody Bellinger back after they got his price down to 3 years, and he's got opt-out, so it might be 1 year, so kind of if he has his way. They brought the same team back, and they missed the playoffs last year.
No Stroman.
They got Imanaga. Oh. So Stroman was an all-star last year. Is Imanaga an all-star this year? Stroman didn't finish well. It's 6-1, half dozen the other. In my mind, I mean, a lot of people like Imanaga. Some people think he might struggle. He's Stroman. It's the same thing. Not only that, but now Jameson Taillon, who was a $68 million pitcher, is going to open the season on the IL. I don't know how long that'll be. Maybe it won't be very long. But you were counting on him. He struggled last year. He was terrible last year. You were counting on him to at least sort of progress to the mean of his career. And maybe at least have some baseline success. Now he's going to open on the IL, so you got two younger guys at the back end of the rotation. That's the Cubs with all the money. They could have gone out and done some stuff. They could have done more. Your boys that you cover, they went and got Sonny Gray. Hey, more power to them on that. That's a good move. They promised they were going to go get three starters to put at the front of that rotation. They got one. The other two guys, Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson, they're dice rolls. Look, nobody's a bigger competitor than Lance Lynn, and he's got a comfort zone in St. Louis. There's no doubt about it. I like the guy personally. I like what he brings to the table, but he struggled a lot in Chicago last year, and he's not young and entering his prime. I thought when they made those two moves that they were making depth moves, and they still had at least one other significant pitcher to go add, and they didn't do it. The Reds did more than the rest of them. The Reds went and spent $108 million on free agents. Now, they started at basically zero for a payroll, so take that for what it's worth, but they filled their needs, and it's coming into play now, especially on the pitching side, because they've had a couple of injuries, but they're able to Frankie Montas is going to start the opener, and Nick Martinez, who was with the Padres the last 2 years and did pretty well in a swingman, mostly relief role, he earned the fifth starter job. So they're going to, I think they probably go deeper in starting pitching, especially if Nick Lodolo comes back healthy on or about April 10th like they expect. I think they have as much depth, five or six, as anybody in the division. They don't have the top guys. They don't have a Sonny Gray or Freddie Peralta. So it's just, throw them all in a pile and see who comes out of the mud.
All right, so we just were talking to Craig Counsell, the new manager of the Cubs, the highest paid manager in the game, and their biggest free agent acquisition, really, of the offseason, and perhaps maybe the biggest in the division. I don't know, Sonny Gray probably is up there. Bellinger returning, you know, whatever. But the new addition, Craig Counsell, got a lot of headlines. And his point, one of the things he said was it takes a surprise to shift a season. So it's somebody you're not talking about in spring. Who is going to help shape, you know, for the Brewers, like you look, he mentioned Aguilera, a guy who hit 30 home runs as a claim. I think Willy Adames is a great example in spring training. They weren't thinking about him, but then, you know, a few weeks, month in, they trade for him. It radically changes the Brewers' season. For the Reds, you know that team. Who could that be? Because if there is a team, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but if there's a team that is positioned to have a surprise shape the division, the Cardinals would like that to be maybe Zach Thompson. The Cardinals wonder maybe if at some point them that could be Victor Scott II. They would be thrilled if it's Mason Winn or Jordan Walker, you know, manifesting as impact players in some way. But don't the Reds have like a list of candidates who could be players with enough talent to kind of shift the division?
Yeah, Derek, I think you and I have talked about this before. Going into spring training, I thought the Reds were a team that had so much talent, just raw young talent, that if enough things went right, I mean, they could win 95 games. But that they have so much raw young talent that the floor is way lower, too. They could win 75 games. That's what I thought going in, because there's so many variables involved with young players. Since then, Noelvi Marte, who was going to go in with rookie status intact after breaking in last season in August, got popped for PEDs. He's going to miss half the season. TJ Friedl broke his wrist. He's their center fielder and leadoff hitter. He's a guy that led the majors with 17 bunt hits last year. Also hit 17 balls over the fence. So the guy's a little bit of a dual.
Yeah, the rare 17-17 club. Yeah, that was something.
Well, he had an inside the park home run too, so it was kind of 17-18.
Oh, okay, 17-18, my fault.
So he's going to
people don't talk about that enough.
Right. Yeah. So he's going to be out until probably sometime in May, and then Matt McClain, who was their best player last year when he came up as a rookie, he was the best player until he got hurt in September. He hurt his shoulder, his non-throwing shoulder, and we expect at any moment to get the second medical opinion on that. It could mean surgery, but at the very least, it's going to be an extended stay on the IL for him. Those are two of their top three hitters in their lineup in the batting order. Mm. They're also their two best defenders. So, you know, throw 95 wins out the window. That ain't happening. So it brings us back to bunching up. But if you were going to look for a possible player that nobody's talking about in Reds camp. Yes, they've got a lot of young players, but even people maybe in Cincinnati, people in Cincinnati aren't talking about. Keep an eye on Will Benson, left-handed hitter, who was a first-round draft pick of Cleveland a few years ago. They traded him over before last season. He actually got a cameo in the playoffs the year before, but he struggled early, and they sent him down, and they brought him back up, and Joey Votto helped him a little bit with approach. Once they brought him back up from about the end of May to the rest of the season, he was one of the best hitters in the league, just kind of under the radar. They didn't play him a lot against left-handers, and they batted him ninth as often as anything. But he's got speed, he's got power, he's a smart player, and he's worked really hard in the offseason with some of those Cleveland Gold Glove-type guys, Stephen Kwan in particular. And he's worked a lot on his fielding, and he's going to get a lot of reps in center with Friedl out. Mm. I liked him already as a breakout candidate this year because of what I saw last year. And with more opportunity that's presenting itself early, I like it even more.
What are the Reds doing and how do the injuries impact this to capitalize on their ballpark? You've covered teams in some signature ballparks that find a way to adapt their team to the identity or the trends, the ballpark factors, if you will, of their home field. What are the Reds doing at Great American Small Park to kind of the pinball machine that is the you know, the light right there along the water? What are they doing to maximize that, and how is that reflected in either the players they acquired or some of the players they're going to count on from their own system?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago when they decided to go on this major rebuild and get rid of a bunch of guys, they identified a problem with the way they'd put their teams together in recent years, and maybe they weren't as good. That big part of it, right? Now they were relying.
They didn't spend much on them. I spotted some trends.
Well, hey, $225 million on Joey Votto. What's the biggest Cardinals contract?
Yeah. Well, the one that they didn't sign is what set that up, right? Isn't that is Albert Pujols did not sign with the Cardinals, and then they, you know, the Reds were like, we're not going to let that happen, so they launched into.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, so anyway, they thought that building a team that could hit the ball over the fence a lot to take advantage of that ballpark was the way to go, and it wasn't as efficient enough, and all those guys make a bunch of money, so they decided to get more athletic. They downplay this, but I also think, you know, we all saw the new rules coming. Mm-hmm. And I think that they thought, okay, well, we'll maximize that, almost like a market inefficiency, almost like Moneyball 2.0. Mm-hmm. Where they were in a position to pick the kind of players they wanted when they did this and went after young players. Let's get them. We worked with the Diamondbacks last year. Mm-hmm. Cleveland already had those players, and it worked a lot for them in their success recently. But anyway, so they did that. And when those athletes started getting to the big leagues last year, that's when that season took off unexpectedly. Remember, they lost 100 games the year before. Mm-hmm. Nobody expected them to do anything last year. And when they plugged holes in the offseason going into last season, it was just to give them major league representation in the rotation and in the bullpen and things like that, not to try to win necessarily. And so they were surprised as anybody when the playoffs were in play. They were in first place in July. So they got that close. They were better faster than even they thought. So when they went into this offseason, they went with some serious purpose. And again, as I alluded to earlier, the payroll is already next to nothing. So they had resources to work with, certainly relative to what they normally have. So they jumped the market on some pitching early. And they got Jamer Candelario fairly early in the process. Then you're saying Jamer Candelario? They didn't sign one All Star. They went to camp with one guy on the 40-man roster who had ever made an All Star team.
Huh? Wow.
That was the closer last year. So they have since traded for an infielder who's made one All Star. That's where they are, right? Mm-hmm. But all the guys they signed in the offseason, there were some specific things. Like Frankie Montas spent all last year hurt, but he was one of the most coveted guys in the trade market for 2 years prior to that and was a rising All-Star. Matter of fact, would have made an All-Star team if he hadn't been popped for PEDs back about 5 years ago. So this is a guy that if he's healthy, he's one of these – he's an upside guy. He's a massive upside guy. So he signed him for a one-year deal, and he gets to prove it and then go sign a multi-year deal with somebody else. So they got him. They got Nick Martinez, who could be a bullpen guy, and been very, very successful at that, a multi-inning bullpen guy, but also can start. And Emilio Pagan in the bullpen. So they did this, right? None of them are all-stars. But the pitchers have, for the most part, one common element to them, soft contact. Mm. So they tend to not give up home runs, some of those guys they signed. So there's that. And then Jamer Candelario, this is a guy with – so on the one hand, he's kind of a middle-aged baseball veteran who has a sort of a mentorship mm-hmm. reputation that he's built the last few years. So he was designed to be brought in to be a mentor for Ellie De La Cruz. Mm-hmm. They're both switch hitters. And Noel V. Marte as well. But in addition to that, guy gives him depth in the infield, but he also led the league in doubles a few years ago, hit a bunch of doubles last year, and he's got 20 home run pop in most places. But that 20 home run pop with all those doubles in Detroit a few years ago mm-hmm. might translate to 30 home runs in this ballpark.
Is the thinking along the – I like that a lot. I've often wondered why, like if you're running the Colorado Rockies, why would you pay for power? Just count on your ballpark to develop power, or to let it be – pay for guys who put the ball in play, who hit the ball in the air, and then our athletes in defense.
You're going to get a lot of doubles off of balls that look like singles.
Right. Exactly. You're going to get a lot of balls. You know, you're going to – you don't need to – you can go get the 20 – the 260, the 700 OPS defensive whiz and go plop them into Coors Field and get an 8 maybe. You know, but what? Why pay for offense when you get the to put a player in that realm? It sounds like the Reds are doing a similar thing, like prioritize run prevention because there are going to be home runs. So don't give the extra guy on base. Go get pitchers who don't walk people, and don't go get defenders who don't let balls get passed. Play saran wrap defense so when the home runs do happen, because they're going to happen, you know, they're not three run shots. They're not 8 run jagged innings. They're limited because you haven't given away the free bases that then get you in trouble when that fly out to left field that usually is caught in 27 different ballparks is over the fence, and now you have to deal with it. It sounds like that's what they're doing.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Yeah, and they already had – this is about complementing what they already had, right? Because they've got some very strong, hard-throwing, live, young arms, Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo, Graham Ashcraft, who were rookies just 2 years ago. If those guys make a mistake, it goes over the fence. Mm-hmm. Hunter Green has a lot of experience with that 100-mile-an-hour fastball that sometimes gets timed up.
Yeah, what was that like for him? I mean, super talent, obviously, high draft pick, lots of expectations. What have you seen? What do you think that is like for a young pitcher in that ballpark calling it home? Does he, like, go, all right, this is a challenge that I want to master in my time here. This is a challenge I have to face. Or does he, like, go, man, imagine if I called a bigger ballpark home?
Yeah, I think he's still trying to figure out the big league life in general. He hasn't put together a full big league season yet because of some injuries. He's got 46 career starts. Yeah. And he's a guy that, as an amateur coming into pro ball, he hasn't pitched a lot.
I mean, he could be the best pitcher in the division, right? He has that talent.
Yes, because he has flashed no-hit stuff when he's going well. The first time I saw him pitch as a guy that had just been hired to cover the Reds was at Wrigley Field, and he pitched 6 no-hit innings.
Really had to commute for that game.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the kind of stuff this guy has when he's on. And there was a lot of talk in Reds camp. Oh, he's adding a split finger, and he's adding a curveball. He's trying to give him a different look off of that fastball. He's got a fastball and a slider. When he's locating it, he throws 6 no-hit innings. He doesn't need another pitch. He needs to figure out what he's got. That was a priority for him in camp. We'll see how it plays this season. He should be their ace year after year after year, and he should be at some point the best pitcher in the division. I don't know if he'll get there. He's a smart guy. He seems to have his head screwed on straight. And amazing talent, but big leagues are hard, man.
If he is, do the Reds win this division?
If he has a breakout year this year, absolutely. Yeah. That makes him the most important player in the division. If he has a, let's just say a 32 starts, 15 wins, and a 3.6 ERA, they win the division. He's the most important player in the division then.
You guys, you're talking about how they built their team, or at least took clues from their team or tips from their team to from their ballpark to construct the team. Cardinals are doing the same thing. They have Busch Stadium, which is a pitcher paradise. It plays very pitcher-friendly, has always. Yeah.
That's all it. Downtown.
Yeah, I live in the city, man. That's cool. It's a place that, let's say, allows for some latitude with pitchers. They get away with a few more mistakes. It's really hard to pull home runs there. It's hard, Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado have learned, like, what it's like to be a right-handed hitter in that ballpark, and, you know, just the difference of power from where they came to now where they call home. But they're leaning into this a little bit. You know, you go and get Lance Lynn, who gave up the most home runs in the game last year. You go get Kyle Gibson, who gave up the most hits in the American League last year. You know, and that's their; those are two of their additions to the rotation, and it seems counterintuitive, and it might not work. But the idea is that they're like, well, our ballpark will be more forgiving for that, and you better put a good defense behind that. Well, there's one flaw with this notion, and I see
Sears won other games.
Well, sure, yeah, anyone other games, but I mean, look at where they open, though. I mean, they open at Dodger Stadium, lots of ground to cover there. They open, or then they go to San Diego, lots of ground to cover there. Then they come home, six games at Busch Stadium. We've already established that. Then they go Arizona, so lots of ground to cover there. And then there's, though not as forgiving, but lots of ground to cover there. And then they go to Oakland, lots of ground to cover. You could go, okay, well, look, yeah, that makes sense. That's going to be a hard slog to start the season, but it's not going to be like you're not going into like any telephone booths to play. The problem with it is that two of their outfielders are starting on the injured list. A lot of their defense might not be at its best. They're trying to figure out when to lean into, you know, what to do defensively there with the outfield, because last year it just cratered on them because they played in a forgiving ballpark. But when the outfielders didn't make plays, those mistakes became doubles. Those doubles became rallies, and the pitching was already behind and scorching for innings. So it just kind of aggravated the flaw in the roster already. Do you think, and I can tell by the look on your face, do you think that going old school and older with the rotation and saying, all right, we're going to like have our ballpark be a factor, do you think that could work for the Cardinals?
No. It's the same as the Cubs trying to run the same damn team back out there again. Go get better players. You know, get good players. You got to play in every damn ballpark. And, I mean, over a two-year span, you literally play in every ballpark now. Mm-hmm. So,
in some ballparks you don't expect to play in any, you know, in neutral site games. The Cardinals are going to Rickwood.
You remember the Red Sox did that for decades to their detriment before just deciding to put good teams together that could play the game better than other teams in the modern climate, as opposed to the Fenway climate. No, get better players. You might be able to fool some people who don't remember that teams used to do that all the time, and not always successfully.
You're not a believer in what the Cardinals did this offseason, are you? Are you buying into the quality starts, the innings, any of it?
No, I think they sold their fans a bill of goods by promising three pitchers and getting the guys they did. Sonny Gray was the one good slam dunk signing I'll give him credit for. I won't give him credit for the other two.
And their opening day starter is Miles Michaelis. So you have seen the Brewers, the Reds, and the Cubs. What has stood out about these teams in spring training?
Well, the Brewers and the Reds, and really probably even more the Brewers than the Reds at this point, is just how freaking young they are. I mean, Jackson Chourio is going to start in center for the Brewers. He's already got, an $82 million contract?
Right. Yeah, they're going around.
So maybe he's the rookie of the year.
More money committed to him than the Cardinals committed to Sonny Gray.
Yeah, right. And they traded Corbin Burns, and they lost Devin Williams to an injury. So you can't really go in with expectations. But the haul they got back, in one case literally, the haul they got back for Corbin Burns was pretty impressive. And so they had some guys come up that maybe didn't get a lot of attention the last year or two. Sal Frelick, what's the other kid's name, Weimer. Mm-hmm. They've got some good young players, and I don't think that they're going to be down for long, and I'm not sure that they're going to be a losing team this year, like maybe.
Really?
Yeah. But that goes back to what we were saying. I mean, they're not winning 90 games either like they did last year. So you could have four teams. Actually, you could have five teams in the division win between 80 and 84 wins.
Do you think 82 wins this division?
I mean, I can't say yes to that just because it's so mathematically difficult.
Do you think 80 wins this division?
Be like, what year was that my Seahawks made the playoffs with a 7-9 record? And then I think they beat New Orleans in the first round.
That's nice.
Yeah, it'd be like that.
Imagine if that happened against the Dodgers, man. Los Angeles would, like, flip.
Oh, my God. Yeah, jeez. And, yeah, I don't know. No, 80 ain't going to win it. But, yeah, because, you still play each other so many times. But 84, 85, sure.
It'd be super interesting if what decides this division is the rivals. Like, the fact that, because that's the one part of the schedule, right, other than the fact that like the Reds go to Seattle and the Cardinals host Seattle, right? Okay, so it's not exactly the same, but everybody plays everybody except for the one place now in the division where it's tilted a little bit is those extra games or the extra one game against your natural rival. So the Cardinals draw the Royals, Cleveland and Cincy, right? Brewers and Twins and Cubs and White Sox. Wouldn't it be fascinating if that's the one? Like who has the most competitive rival?
Wow. So you're saying that the Cubs win the division because they're going to sweep that crappy team on the south?
Right. It's like the Brewers, man. They draw the Twins. It's like, well, that might be the best team. The Reds draw Cleveland. That's a pesky team. And what, Kansas City spent more on free agents than a whole bunch of teams and might be all right. So there you go.
Yeah, and I think the White Sox are going to give Oakland a run for worst record in the game.
Really? So there you go. So congratulations, Cubs victory tour begins.
There you go, and we're in the right place to start the season, Derek.
All right. So give me your sense of this season. Just what do you expect to see? Maybe not just in what interests you most as we're here on the eve of opening day. Not just within the NL Central, but just in general.
Shohei Ohtani's gambling investigation.
What a week, right? Like, Shohei Ohtani, you have the union. I mean, there's just a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, all eyes have to be on L.A. right now, right? And they doubled down, tripled down, quadrupled down on their offseason and the decade of excellence, decade plus of excellence that they've had.
Regular season excellence.
Correct. And pandemic postseason excellence.
The bubble tournament,
yeah. So that, I mean, that's going to be fascinating to watch. Just for the, can I say show?
Oh, well, I'll have to edit that out.
Yeah, but for the show that's going to be on a day after day after day basis. That's ridiculous. That'll be the most fun to watch. And then, is New York going to have a team in the playoffs this year after missing last year? Mm-hmm. And then what's going on in Texas? Because I don't know that Houston gets in this year. I think Seattle wins that division. And Texas is stronger, but Texas didn't spend like they had the previous 2 years. They're waiting on some pitchers to get back. And, I mean, they're not even going back and getting, well, at least as we sit here now, getting Jordan Montgomery back. And I think that has to do probably with their TV money,
mm-hmm.
as much as anything. So, there's a lot of great storylines around the game.
There are. Do you think the game's in a good spot as far as the product on the field now, second year of these new rules, and maybe even, well, they shaved off a few seconds? I think the obstruction rule is a little weird, and we're going to see some weirdness there, blocking the base and everything. But they shave a few more seconds off the pitch timer. Do you think the quality of the game is in a good spot?
I don't like any of the obstruction rules.
Yeah, and that's... Yeah.
I mean, I cover Cincinnati now, so I have to think in terms of Pete Rose. And
do you? Is that required?
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know.
It's just like, you know, if you cover the Reds, you have to compare everything to Charlie Hustle. Like, yeah, if you cover the Cardinals, you have to compare it all to Whitey Ball. Are these the rules that are in play?
Those are the rules. Watch out, Ray Fosse. You know, get rid of those stupid obstruction rules. So what were you asking me about that?
The quality of the game on the field. You've covered baseball a long time, and the athletes in the game right now, I mean, look, obviously you can get the velocity hounds and go crazy, or the
The pitch labs and the spin rates and all that, and now the splitter's the new pitch, even though it's 40 something years old, and it's all the rage. Just throw strikes, and I like fastballs and curveballs and location
and seam shifted wake. You're a big fan of seam shifted wake.
Sure. Yeah.
Did you just short circuit on me?
Yeah, you're gonna have to explain it. Anyway,
what's the difference? No, all right.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I like the fact that there's more the what the rules have done is they've increased the value of balls in play, right? Mm-hmm. And that always makes the game better. It always has. That's why the game was invented. The game was not invented to, you know, Joe Maddon used to say it and other people have said it. Pitching is so important you could call the game pitching instead of baseball. But it wasn't designed that way. Originally, when professional baseball was played, it was underhand pitching. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was to hit the ball and put it in play and make people throw it around the field. And when we got away from that, the game sucked. And there's still a lot of that, but now we're at least bringing it back closer to what it's supposed to be.
So more action in the quicker games, better pace, and like you said, more action because there's more balls in play, more of an emphasis on athleticism, which we see in some of these teams.
Bases are fun.
Yeah, stolen bases are great fun. You know, that's one of the things you see youth, which you'll see with the Brewers. You see the electricity, I believe, is the headline of your special section of the Reds. All right, so here's my final question.
Right. Electricity with two L's.
And a capital Y.
And a capital Y.
Yeah. So here's my question for you. We started by kind of skewering the NL Central a little bit, like calling it a dead zone and everything, and noting that like it is kind of barren of clear contenders at a time when the coast.
Crap.
Right.
When the coast, the brackets of the country are standing out. I mean, like, just those are where the Titans of the National League are. In Atlanta, Philly, L.A., San Francisco's raised up. I think the Padres are going to be really good. I actually picked the Padres to win that division because I can't get my head around who is actually going to pitch for the Dodgers. They also spent $1 billion and Mookie Betts is their shortstop. It's a very odd team. But anyway, here's where I want to close with this. So if we agree that the pace is good, athleticism is really being prioritized, and there is a chance that these games are more entertaining, is it possible that parity in the NL Central makes for a compelling season? That because there isn't one of those juggernaut Titans, tycoon teams, that we're actually in for maybe some pretty compelling standings watching, some pretty compelling style games, that not having a favorite could make the division, if not worthy or ready for October, pretty damn entertaining?
And frustrating. Because I think you're right. When you get to September and they start playing each other a lot, and I think the Reds finish with the Cubs, that could be for the division. Then, yes, when they start going head-to-head and they're bunched up, no question. But in the meantime, you're going to have 5 months of the season where teams are going to go out to the West Coast for 10 days, or you're going to have the American League teams on your schedule, and you're going to have, you know, Houston and the Yankees, and then the Phillies are going to be right behind them, and your team's going to get roasted, and you're going to be like, oh man, my team sucks, and then they're going to get back in the division, and maybe
the comforts of home, the warm embrace of the NL Central.
Yeah, so I don't know, it could be agonizing.
Chicken soup for the Central contender's soul.
just make sure, yeah, your team goes out the West Coast, just go to sleep.
Just get the games. you're blacked out from them anyway. Yeah, that is Cincinnati Inquirer baseball writer Gordon Whitmire here at Sloan Park. Thank you very much, Gordo. Have a safe trip home. See you at some point in time this season, though less than ever.
Yeah, right. Fewer trips to St. Louis.
Yes. Fewer trips to Skyline Chili. Bummer. Special thanks to Gordon Whitmire of the Cincinnati Inquirer for joining this week's Best Podcast in Baseball and help kind of offer up a season preview of sorts. The next time the Best Podcast in Baseball comes to you, the regular season will have started. The Cardinals open the season March 28th at Dodger Stadium against Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers and all of the showstoppers and blockbusters and just Hollywood storylines that Tinseltown can offer. The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis. You can always find The Best Podcast in Baseball and all of the Constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. Look for it there. The special section ran this past Sunday, but you can still get it online at stltoday.com. Hundreds of inches on the Cardinals, Major League Baseball, and the 2024 season. Looking forward to a season of ball talk for the Best Podcast in Baseball and all the coverage at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm baseball writer Derek Gould. Talk to you soon.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.